best our life. And there are a lot of places we can invest time, effort, and ministry. And I realize the value of all of these targets, but for today we're going to just focus in on the church discipleship target. People who are in churches, or people related to churches. When we try to define something, it's often difficult to put it in words, isn't it? For example, let me read you this paragraph to get us into this. A cow is a completely automated milk manufacturing machine. It is encased in untanned leather and mounted on four vertical movable supports, one on each corner. The front end of the machine contains the cutting and grinding mechanisms, as well as the headlights, dog catchers, air intake, and exhaust, and bumper and foghorn. At the rear, the machine carries the milk dispersing apparatus as well as the automatic fly swatter and insect repeller. The central portion houses a hydrochemical conversion plant. Briefly, this consists of four fermentation and storage tanks connected in a series by an intricate network of flexible plumbing. This part also contains the central heating plant, complete with automatic temperature controls, pumping station, and main ventilation system. The waste disposal apparatus is located in the rear of this central section. Cows are available in an assortment of colors and sizes. Production output ranges from 2 to 10 tons of milk per year. In brief, the main externally visible features are 2 lookers, 2 hookers, 4 stander-uppers, 4 hanger-downers, and a swishy-wishy. So, it is difficult sometimes to put in words what we know, right? My wife and I have been in this church discipleship ministry business for a number of years, for 15 intensively. And we will try to put into words some of what we have observed and some of what we have learned. This is an overview of where we are going in our time together. We will get into some issues on perspective, just to give a broad overview perspective of some of the issues related to church discipleship, a comparison between the way a local church tends to think and the way a navigator type background person tends to think and the differences. The senior pastor, we're going to take a look at him and his role, and that influences a lot of what you and I will do in ministry. We'll be talking about some ministry categories that we can give our time to outside the church and inside the church. 2 major areas of need that in our working with churches we see in local churches. So we'll go from the overall perspective to some ministry suggestions, both general suggestions and church-related suggestions. Then we'll open it for questions, answers, discussion, and close off our time. So that is the direction of where we are going and what we hope to accomplish in the time that we have. In making a comparison, in your notes you can see we've gotten into a comparison of the local church and a navigator, or navigator in quotes. And I've been quick to say there, many lay people do a better job of evangelizing and discipling than full-time navigator staff people. So I put in quotes, navigator, that's somebody who isn't a full-time staff person, but there are a lot of those in quotes navigators who are doing a better job than those of us who give 100% of our time to ministry. And there may be some in this room, I'm sure there are. But we're trying to get a perspective here, and I'm just going to go very quickly through some of this perspective, but I think it will give us a context for the issue of ministry. In the local church, they are committed to preach all the counsel of God, the Acts 20:27, Paul talking to the Ephesian elders there, the need to cover a broad spectrum of topics and emphases. Then you drop down to number 1 under navigator. Primarily the focus is on the wheel and the hand, year after year. It's those issues, and you keep coming back to them, and you don't do other subjects. You stay on those subjects, and when you're through with those subjects with one person or one couple, then you move on to another person and another or another couple, and you do the same things. Then the second issue here is that the local church is committed to work with both problem and potential people. And it's interesting, then the distribution to the widows, they chose seven men filled with the Spirit of God who were godly, strong Christians to do that social action work. And you find local churches committed to both the problem and potential people, and rightfully so. And there are a lot of hurting people. There are a lot of people with tremendous needs. There's more interest in churches across the country now in the inner city problem, with runaway kids, with unwed mothers, with social problems that face our culture. And who should hit them more than the church? It's got to be Christians. It's got to be the church. But those who are more focused in on a discipling ministry will focus their attention to the potential people, not the problem people. And so any navigator background person will walk up to a pastor and say, "Now listen, pastor, it just makes sense that you should not be giving 90% of your time to problem people and 10% of your time to potential people." And the pastor, he'll shake his head, but he'll go back, but God is leading us to meet some of these needs. And many of these people come to Christ as a result of meeting their needs. And then the third comparison I would like to make is the local church minister to people from the cradle to the grave. And in Titus 2, it's just interesting, the different categories, the older men, the older women, and those in navigator staff or that kind of ministry, we're not thinking older men and older women. See, we're thinking 18 to 35 as the primary target. Any navigator ministry in the world, you say, what age group are you after? Oh, 18 to 35. Does that mean they don't work with a person who's 36 or 46 or 56? Yeah, but the target will be the younger age groups. Their patterns aren't set, and that will be the focus. And then the fourth issue here is being committed to social action and doing good to those within the body of Christ, but also those who are outside. What can we do that will meet some of the problems and needs? Where the discipling person who is gifted and called to go primarily that direction will keep focusing in on the gospel and follow up in the broad sense. And then the fifth one here, under the local church, often committed to evangelism and basic spiritual growth, but not to raising up strong lay leaders. It's more the 1 Peter 2, 2, and 3 emphasis, the newborn babes. The emphasis may be on knowledge without accountability for application. And this is not a put-down, and I don't know if we have pastoral staff in here, but I'm very pro-local church, as you'll see as we go. But I think that's an honest evaluation, that the focus tends to be knowledge without a means of accountability, so the application takes place. And the focus is normally at a basic growth level, where the discipling kind of person will not be satisfied until there is a laborer, and the emphasis will be on know-how and on application. So keep in mind where we are here in the outline. We're just trying to get a perspective, a framework within which to talk, see? But we've got to see there's a difference in mentality of local church, pastoral staff, and board or committees, and a person who has grown up with a navigator background and who is primarily focusing on discipleship. And at some point, we've got to marry these two. See, that's the direction I'm headed. But we do have a difference in the vantage point. Then the role of the pastor. I think these are some key issues for us. Many of these things you probably know, but it's good for us to touch on them. Item number one, most senior pastors are not gifted and or called to concentrate on a disciple-making ministry. If they were, there would not be a senior pastor. And I've been in past years in pastors' conferences that the Navigators sponsored. And you know what we were trying to do? We were trying to get those pastors to do a Navigator ministry. What a waste of a whole week. Because that's not what they should be doing. That's not what they should give their time to. Some of them, yes. Some of them are senior pastors, and they are discipling individuals or in small groups. But most senior pastors are gifted in a way that will cause them to do other ministries. And then number two here is senior pastors usually give their time in some combination to these three areas. To the preaching, teaching, some combination there. And to counseling and to administration. So some pastors, they set it up where 80% of their time they're counseling people. There are others who give 95% of their time to message preparation and delivering that powerful message from the pulpit and maybe teaching in a class. And so what do we do as a discipler? Do we go in and say, Pastor, you've really got your priorities messed up, you know? No, I think that's the way God has put these people together, and I think they're doing the right thing. Then number three, a wise senior pastor delegates, the Exodus 18 passage. An only pastor in a small church tends to carry too much of the load himself in order to have things done right. A senior pastor in a larger church may have an associate pastor in charge of evangelism and discipleship. Very few pastors feel comfortable trusting a lay person to take ultimate responsibility. But I think number four is the reason. I think that's part of God's protection system that a local congregation doesn't get headed off in a wrong direction. And the Titus 1:5, really the Titus passage, that this pastor has been put in there to be responsible for that flock and to carry the leadership. And so I don't care whether the pastor is 25 years old or 65 years old. At 25, that pastor has the responsibility of that congregation given to him by God. Now, I don't want to get into different church government and all that. You know, well, the consistory or the board or the elders or the deacons or, you know, what is their role? And in our church, it's 50-50, or in our church, it's 75% the board and 25%. You know, it'll vary from denomination to denomination. But I think this little diagram that you have here, where the pastor's up here and the lay person's down here, and the lay people relate upward, and the pastor relates downward. Now we say, it shouldn't be that way. You know, I'm 50 years old, and I know 1,000 verses of Scripture that I can quote at an instant's notice, King James Version, and you know, this pastor, I think maybe he could quote 12 verses if he brushed up, you see. But God has put that pastor in a leadership role, and there is no way that you can be a peer. It's very difficult. Maybe after years of having been on the board and having done different things, but it is rare that a lay person will be a peer on an equal level with a pastor. But another pastor will be equal with that pastor. A missionary will be equal with that pastor. And a navigator leader, not a navigator way down the line, but, you know. And so to impact pastors, I see so many lay people trying to change their pastor. You will only do that through a peer of the pastor. So maybe that illustrates, you know, just a perspective on that will help us as we discuss these issues. Okay, what about some categories of ministry? And let's just use the handout. And I won't keep flipping on the overhead here. Let's just wade through this. If we have a personal ministry, and you may think of other categories, but we can go out and do evangelism anywhere, anytime, with, you know, in groups, with couples, with individuals. Nobody can say, thou shalt not go do this. We can do anything in personal ministry. We can do any kind of follow-up of converts or picking up orphan Christians anywhere. We don't care what church they're from. This has nothing to do with our church. We can pick those people up and help them. We can get Bible studies going in our neighborhood or several people that we know. We can get people going on scripture memory. We can do that anytime. We can share the beginning of Christ packet with anybody, anywhere. Hey, when I see you for lunch sometime, we can do that. We can do the whole discipleship thing from beginning to end and get them into Bible study, evangelism, scripture memory, get them praying more effectively. We can get with people and pray and see them grow in prayer. We can counsel people. We can get, you know, we click it off with somebody. We just ran across them. We get into spiritual things. Before you know it, we are counseling them. We're giving them some help. We say, you ought to read this passage. Here, why don't you consider reading this book? Why don't you do this? We get into the marriage family issue very easily in our culture today and help people. Young couples, if we've got our marriage together, our kids look pretty good, those young couples come up, wow, could we talk to you about this? Or maybe they're a little hesitant and maybe we have to take the lead. But when we talk about church ministries, it pretty much rules out individuals. And we're primarily talking groups. That's the way we operate our churches. We can do visitation and evangelism through our church. And often some of the most effective evangelism we will do will be through leads and under the umbrella of our church. We can help with follow-up, though that isn't as strong an emphasis in conservative evangelical churches across America today. We can lead a Bible study, though I would say most pastors will feel more comfortable if a Bible college or seminary graduate will lead any kind of training or small groups. And you say, well, that's not right. I didn't know how sharp we are. But I'm telling you the way it is, you know. And, you know, I see some heads nodding, you know. You can teach Sunday school. Now, is that a lesser calling? I don't think so. A dozen years ago, my wife and I had a discipleship group in our church. And one of the couples, they just weren't getting their work done, you know. Well, what's our first reaction? No commitment. No commitment. They don't mean business. See, these are navigator cliches if you've traveled our circles. They don't mean business. Not committed. So they dropped out, and I said, that confirms it. They are not committed. But we had a 3.5-year-old daughter who got into a Sunday school class with that wife. She was a genius with three-year-olds. She would hug them. She would get down and look them in the eye. She would talk about Jesus. And she would put their hands together and have a prayer. And she did things with our daughter that winter that we're reaping dividends today with an almost 16-year-old daughter. You see? And that really started changing my outlook on what is a value and what isn't a value in ministry. Now, I am as committed as ever to laborers, to multiplication, to scripture memory, to evangelism. You know, I have not lost the vision. but there are investments that need to be made in lives, links in a long chain. And when we're in the discipling business, often we reap what others have sown for years and years in this life. And then we help them put it all together in 9 months to a year. And we're the big heroes. But I think God's keeping score a little better than that. And I think the couple who dropped out of our discipling group, and she made an investment of a year in our daughter and some others, you know, that's right up on the scale with hard-nosed, narrow-minded discipleship. I'm just joking a little with you. I'm a narrow-minded, but we can, you know, get our vision too squeezed up. The 2-7 series, very acceptable in the church context, and we can do all the discipling things under the umbrella of the church, and no questions asked, and it's just as tough as outside of the church. We can be on boards and committees. I think all of us should have a wilderness experience like that at least once. It's hard work. It's tough. There are some real snags that have to be dealt with. There are some horrendous interpersonal relationship things that need to be grappled with. And you may have the political leaders of the church, not the spiritual leaders on this committee or board. And it's because of their success in business, not their success with Jesus. And you get into some very interesting things. But that's real life, you see. And I think just because we're committed to multiplication, we shouldn't say, well, I shouldn't take my turn. You know, why should I get into all that? Well, because it needs to be done. And if we're committed to that church, members of that church, we need to put in our year or 3 years or however it's set up, you see. Fellowship groups. Every church will be interested in fellowship groups. This is maybe a little less structured than we would be used to in a Bible study group. But one of the major weaknesses I see in a person with a navigator kind of background, a discipling background, is we aren't as committed to relationships as we are to objectives. And so with any strength, there's a corresponding weakness, isn't there? And, you know, we tend to marry opposites. And why is it that this meticulous, neat, orderly person marries this outgoing, gregarious, messy person? And how many years has it taken you to work on this in your marriage? You know, we're still working on it in ours. And we tend to look down our nose at people who aren't like we are and don't think the way we do. And yet, 1 Corinthians 12, you know, the Lord has put us in a place in the body as He has decided and chosen. And there are many members. And then, I don't know if you're familiar with the book, The Church Unleashed. It's over in the bookstore. But I think that this is the book that's on the cutting edge of the whole philosophy strategy business in the local church. And this is a very important issue, and that leads me into item D here. The two major local church needs today, as I see it, and you know, getting into a lot of churches every year and talking to a lot of pastors and seminary professors and so forth, is we've got to keep doing the things well that we're doing in the local church. By and large in America, the Bible is really being preached and taught from the pulpit. We have 25, 30, 35 years of excellent biblical exposition from the pulpits in most evangelical churches in America. And those of us in the room who've traveled a little bit overseas and rubbed shoulders with Christians in other countries realize that is a rare heritage in the world. And we have adult Sunday school classes in America. We are almost the unique exception in the world in Christendom. You hardly ever find adult Sunday school classes in other countries, in the best Bible churches, Bible preaching, teaching, conservative theology kind of churches. You don't find that. So we're doing a lot right. So I'm not being critical when I say we need to do better in these two areas. I'm saying these are two areas we've got to shape up in the churches. This book, The Church Unleashed by Frank Telepaugh, I would put that in the hands of every pastor and associate pastor I could I could give it to. And say, this has been highly recommended. I have read it. And I want to give this to you. Let me know your reaction after you read it. The second area is philosophy and strategy of ministry. The book I just mentioned really gets into that area. Now, with discipleship, let's just review those two issues. What are we dealing with? We're doing a good job of general preaching, teaching, growth, and in many cases, evangelism and follow-up in a church. But pushing the people beyond that to deepen their own walk with God and sharpen their ministry skills, which is the discipleship area, often we fall short there. The 2-7 series will resolve that, and then some other things. If you're in a Southern Baptist church, Master Life and Master Builder are things that could deal with that. On the philosophy strategy, that is just starting to become an issue among pastoral staff and seminary professors across the country. But most local churches do not have a philosophy and a strategy for their total ministry. And you say, now why is this being done? Well, we've always done it this way. And so they're starting to talk now form and function, the difference between form and function. Well, what is the form? Well, it's a Sunday school class. Well, what is the function? Well, it's to get people in the Scriptures. Is there a better form to accomplish that? I understand the function is to get lay people in the Word. Well, maybe we should supplement that with small groups. Well, maybe we ought to offer that too. And so they're thinking form and function more rather than just form. You know, we sit them down and preach. We sit them down and teach. Etc. Some ministry suggestions that I would lay out now. We've been talking about a perspective at this point. We've talked about the comparison between the emphasis of a local church and a navigator kind of person. We've talked about the senior pastor's role and relating to the past senior pastor, some categories of ministry inside and outside the church, and two major needs within local churches that we're starting to see really change. But what I'd like to do now is to get into ministry suggestions. Some general ones and then some related specifically to the church. So on general ones, number one, maintain deepening friendships with several non-Christians. It's just a principle of ministry life. In November, we moved into a different house. And it's not a new house, but it's new to us. It's maybe a mile from where we were. There are various reasons why we did that. But we are really developing some great friendships in this new neighborhood. We've got a half a dozen couples that we are just getting so close to and laughing with, and you know it's tremendous. And those are the beginnings. That's what has to happen first. There's no way to shortcut that. And then number two is to keep your own life and family in reasonable order. Now, I said reasonable order because people who are in discipling ministries tend to be perfectionistic, goal-oriented, idealistic, and if they're single, multiply that by four. And so but, you know, I don't know if I've ever had my life together. I don't know if we've ever had our family together. Sometimes you say yeah, and then 2 hours later you say no. And you know, but you know, is sin confessed? Are we spending time in Scripture? You know, so forth. But we got to have our act together somewhat to be attractive at all to the people we're trying to influence, either to win to Christ or to disciple. The third general principle. This is the most valuable thing that I've learned in the last 20 years. Is that worth 10 minutes of your time? This has revolutionized the way we operate within our family and within our ministry. And so let me just develop it. It's a little pet sermon, P-E-T. I'm going to give you a little pet sermon here. The thesis statement is, generally, that to which I give prayer, effort, and thought will succeed. That's the basic statement. Now, generally. See, I'm not into success theology, you know, prosperity theology. That's not what I'm saying. But generally, if I put those three ingredients into something, we're going to see results. On prayer, you have not because you ask not. James 4:2, Matthew 4:4. Ask and it shall be given you. There's a dimension to that prayer thing that came into focus with Betty and me a few years ago that's made this whole thing come to life. And it's based on the James 4:2, you have not because you ask not. I used to think of that as not praying enough. But I am now thinking of it more, don't pray harder, pray smarter. Don't pray harder, pray smarter. Let me illustrate it. A few years ago, Betty and I felt that we were under some kind of tremendous stress, and we couldn't put our finger on it. It was kind of a big amoeba blob that hung over us. So I went over to Bemis Library in Littleton, and I went back into the stacks, and I got a desk there, and I took a yellow pad of paper, and I prayed, and I said, now, Lord, I'm not sure what's causing all this stress, but we are uptight, and I'd really like to solve this. And I read a passage of Scripture, and then I put some prayer effort and time into this thing, some thought and time and effort. And so I wrote down every condition under which I felt we were uptight. And after I spent between 3 and 4 hours, I realized that there were two problems. If I could resolve those, it would eliminate 90% of our stress. One was to get my office out of our home in someplace else. The second was we needed a second car. Europeans can never figure that out with Americans. Why in the world you would ever use two cars? But we know when you get into the carpool business, and we don't have the train and bus transportation they do. But we needed another car. So we were having a 2-7 series half day of prayer. And as our practice was to go to a church that's not the church of those people. So I lined it up to go in a Christian ed department. We scattered out in the rooms, and my practice is let them get all the good spots, and I'll take what's left. And so I got this storage room. Ugly blue walls, stuff piled in there. So one of the main focuses of that time was, Lord, I really need an office. I need a place to put my books and to answer my correspondence and everything. I don't need a room this big, but I need a room. 5 months later, God gave me that room in that church. And we got rid of the ugly blue paint and covered it with antique white. And a Christian brother came in, put two fluorescent ceiling lights in. Another Christian brother put paneling across two walls. Another Christian brother put down a chunk of carpet in there. And we moved the desks in there and went to work. And the phone was right outside the door. And the church secretary said, you get a call, I'll just buzz you. And so until we had enough money to put a phone in, we, you know, went that route. But see, there was prayer, effort, and thought went into that whole thing. And I could have prayed about this big blob called stress. God, please remove this stress. But we prayed and fought and put the effort until we realized what the problems were. Then I think that's where importunity comes in. When you know the critical targets. And so we focused, the critical targets were a car and an office. And we would not let him go until he answered. That's where importunity comes in. So praying smarter. Then the E, effort.
Look out with your car.
Instead of just an old used car, we ended up with a brand new Toyota station wagon through some circumstances which I won't develop, beyond what we could have dreamed. And so that was taken care of. Under effort, Ecclesiastes 9:10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. A wholeheartedness, Colossians 3:23 and 24, whatsoever you do, do it heartily as to wholeheartedness, again, to the Lord. It's amazing how lucky you get when you work hard. You know, you hear that. A lot in Proverbs about labor. A lot in the New Testament about labor, effort. I know two businessmen who operate a little manufacturing business in Texas. They will be multimillionaires, there's no doubt in my mind, in another 10 years. But they head for the office at 5:30 in the morning. First, they have a quiet time at their desk. Then they get to work. And by the time the employees get there, they've gotten in at least two full, maybe three good hours before the employees show up. A couple was going to move to Denver. And so they needed some housing. So they came in. I sat them down. I said, I want to preach a pet sermon to you. So we spent 10 minutes. I said, house hunting is E, effort. It is painful. It is frustrating. It is an emotional drain. But I don't think God's going to drop it out of the sky. Now, sure, we've prayed, you've prayed, but I think we're going to have to put in the energy. And so we're going to work all day today looking at houses. Okay? Okay. Well, boy, by the end of the second day, they said, I'm sure glad we talked about PET. To realize that there's a dimension of life where it's just effort. There's no shortcut. It doesn't drop out of the sky. Then on thought, Philippians 4:8 and Colossians 3:2, these are the way passages we usually think of related to, you know, what we think about, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, good report, and so forth. Colossians 3:2, and William says, let your mind be occupied with things above. I put those two familiar passages in, but that's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about more what takes place in Nehemiah, the second chapter, and I've got some other Nehemiah passages here. But it's interesting that Dawson Trotman, founder of the Navigators, who was a man of the Word and a man of prayer, a man of evangelism, would make a statement like this, and this puzzled me for years, it bothered me for years. He made the statement, 95% of knowing the will of God is using the brains God gave you. Now that always bothered me. For years that statement bothered me. It doesn't bother me anymore. And so what we know from the Scriptures, what we know from experience, what we know from education, can all be brought to bear on a problem or an opportunity. And to use our brains and to really think. And we're really not thinking until we're using a piece of paper and a pen with it. And so the book of Nehemiah, you see chapter 1, verse 4, he's thinking. You see prayer toward the end of chapter 1. You see that little arrow prayer in 2:4. So I prayed to the God of heaven. Shoom. And 2:5, effort, thought, work, prayer. 4:9, they prayed and set a watch. Isn't that interesting? They both prayed, which, you know, praying, trusting God, and they put a perimeter defense around where they had guards out there. Effort. I would say that as I deal with Christians of various denominational flavors and backgrounds, we are weakest on thought and strongest on effort. And so prayer is somewhere in the middle that we tend to pray about things, but not the kind of prayer I describe where, Lord, where is the heart of the matter? And give me insight as to where the real problem is here. And that may take counseling and talking to people and other things to give us that answer, but then we can focus the prayer until we get that solved. But you see, this relates to all of life. And so so we're putting more effort into our kids and what we do with them, more thought. We're giving more thought and prayer to ministry. And then the effort that it's going to take to recruit those people for that study, that's going to take a lot of effort. But we've got to be sure our strategy's right when we go for it. Okay, then quickly, some principles for working with couples. A, go after couples, not isolated husbands or wives. I am more convinced about that every year. This thing of having a men's Bible study does not turn me on. You say, oh, you've lost the vision. Now I know you have. There are areas in a man's life you'll never get to unless the wife's sitting there. She will reveal what he really is. And he can put on the big phony act in that men's group forever. But when that wife sits there and he makes a statement, she says, oh, you've got to be kidding. You know, and then he tries to get his composure and he can't. And he's embarrassed and, you know, his pride is hurt, poor boy. And it works the other way around. That wife can hide behind what she is or isn't too. And then having them go through this experience as a couple deepens their communication and their relationship. And I've got too many case histories where either the wife ran off for a Bible study or the husband ran off for a Bible study, and it drew them apart, not together. I've got too many stories. Does that mean I'll never have a men's study group? I might. But I understand this principle, and I'll violate it if I think it fits. Item B, it is as important to have social time with another couple as it is to have spiritual time with them. I would rather have a Bible study every other week and a social activity every other week with that couple to really do a job on them spiritually than to have them every single week just in a Bible study. Now, that doesn't mean you can't have a weekly Bible study or weekly discipling thing. You can. But you've got to have this mindset. Because we discipling kind of people tend to think goals, not relationships. And yet it is the goal, and the pursuit of it could be lost unless we have the relationship. See, it's interesting that Jesus is called a friend of publicans and sinners. See, we tend to put the focus on, oh yeah, he related to sinful people because his goal was to reach them. That's the way many of us tend to think through that verse instead of, oh, friend. Oh, that word is there. Look at that. It is there. And see, maintain an evangelism prospect or prayer list of 1 to 6 people. You know whose priority? A husband or wife if one of them already knows the Lord. And I won't take time to illustrate it, but through the years we've focused in on a husband or a wife who didn't know the Lord. And what a tremendous milestone that is when they both know Christ, and then you can move on down the road. And that's worth quite an investment. D, you will most probably have more of an impact as a couple than in 2 individual ministries. There are times for individual ministries, but I see so many fulfilled couples who have worked together on a thing, and the wife gets on the phone to a couple other wives, and they go shopping together, and they do this, and they do that, and they talk, and their relationship deepens. And the guys are out playing golf on Saturday, and those people really, it really gets to be a tight, close-knit thing, and God can really work through that context. And then E gives us some perspective. With a couple, it takes twice as long as with an individual, but when you get through, you have two people. You know, I've heard that over and over. Oh, couples, it takes too long. You're talking 3 years to produce a disciple couple. I can go work with these guys on the air base over here. 9 months to a year, I got a disciple. Too slow. Besides, you're going to pick up the kids. See? And then the last general principle I like to give you is minister to your kind of people. Oh, man, there are some neighbors we have had, you know. Love thy neighbor becomes an impossible command. I mean, you know. And then there are other people. Oh, man, you can talk about anything. It's just immediate response, immediate communication. But why go after the hard case? I am not convinced that neighbor means the house next door. I'm not convinced it means that. I think it means somebody in that neighborhood. But I think it might take somebody else to reach the person next door, because we just have nothing in common with them. And then on church-related suggestions, and let's just move quickly here. We should join and attend a church we believe in. I get so sick of people saying, well, that pastor preached this dumb sermon. I mean, I just can't believe. I only used 3 verses of Scripture, and 2 of them are out of context. And, you know, and I hear all this moaning and groaning. And I wonder, you know, I hear this a year later, and I say, why in the world are you there? Or I have this doctrinal problem with this church. Well, why are you there? And I put join here. See, I'm tired of lay people who attend church instead of committing themselves to that church and say, I want to be a member of this church. I am a part of this body. I belong to this. I'm not some rebel and renegade. You know, count me in, see. And then 2, select a church for the benefit of your children. We have made the decision through our years. And we've got a 16-year-old and an 11-year-old now, but we feel very good. Our choices in churches were for the kids, not for ministry, and not for us. But we've got 2 kids who are very stable and very excited about God. And I think that investment has been good. And have we lost some ministry? Oh, I don't know. I doubt it. But again, this goal-oriented discipling mentality says, oh, got to reach that goal. We got to disciple. And I've got too many case histories of the kids were sacrificed at the expense of ministry. A missionary statesman, David Morkan, maybe you know his name, his wife Helen, who's gone to be with the Lord a couple years ago, she made the statement. She said, you can neglect your children for the ministry, only to find out that your children were your ministry and that your children eventually undo your ministry. We heard that several years ago. We've got 2 kids up at Eagle Lake Camp right now. We've had the 2 neatest weeks, no kids in the house. We are refreshed. We are, you know, we're ready to take on the world, you know. Day after tomorrow, Betty will pick them up. But I think that's a key issue. And we need to preach it as well as practice it. 3, be a team person, not a loner. You know, pastor, I want to be a member of this church. Pastor, I can't do a lot of things, but maybe there's one thing I can do well. And you know, but I just want you to know, you know, we're here and we're tying in. 4, be a member in good standing in your pastor's fan club. Boy, I'll tell you. With our senior pastor and associate pastors, they know that I put in a good word for those guys everywhere I go and every opportunity. And I am where we want to be and ought to be, and we are committed there, and everybody knows it. 5, lead in your personal ministries follow in the church's ministries. I've seen hard-nosed, goal-oriented disciplers go in and try to take charge. Let's move these chairs. Okay, let's see, how's the ventilation? You go there, do that. I just go in there and I do what I'm told. Well, you're getting kind of weak in your old age, Ron. You're kind of... But I really think that mentality, you know, it has got to be there. That we are there to serve. We are there to help. We are there to help lift the load. We are there to participate. In our church, primarily, I just teach segments of adult Sunday school in a particular class that runs 80 people or something like that. And I don't do that all the time. I'll come in and I'll do 3 weeks or 2 weeks or 4 weeks, and I'll plug a gap when the seminary professor can't be there to teach it. Or you see what I'm saying? I'm just there to help. Well, is that what you want? Well, you want 2 weeks? You want 1 week? You want 3 weeks? Any subject you want? It's up to you, Ron. Do what you want. Number six, attend church regularly. It is the major measurement of your commitment to the church. I hate to say that. That's not a good measurement. But it's usually the measurement. So to be a part of that team and not be a loner, if I need to be there, I'll be there. Now, if I'm in a church where they expect me there 5 meetings a week, at least for our family, we're in the wrong church. Or I've got to get an agreement with the pastor. Church Unleashed, you'll get some insight into that. Fewer meetings, several congregations. Some people are in a congregation at 5:15. They stay home Sunday morning. They maybe sleep in Sunday morning. They get time with their neighbors maybe Sunday morning. There's other heresies in that book that will be very interesting to you. But again, it gets back to form and function, you see. You know, is it really biblical? 11 o'clock Sunday morning, is that biblical? Or is 5:15 okay? Seven, do one job well. And I know the tendency is to overextend. And I think that we do an injustice if we do too many things. But particularly if we have a ministry outside of the church, we want to keep it down to one job. Eight, pray for the ministries of your church and for the pastoral staff. I get calls from the senior pastor and sometimes an associate pastor. Say, Ron, here's what I'm going to do. Will you and Betty really focus prayer on this? Oh, yeah, we really will. Or after church service, you know, shaking hands. Christian education director, hey, Ron, pray about this. Oh, okay, I'll do that. And I do it to them, too. You see, I say, I'm going to Amsterdam 86. Boy, there's just a lot that's got to be done, and we got a big opportunity, and pray for safety. And this terrorist thing gets a little scary going out of the country. You know, and then to come back and say, boy, it was great. And then nine, be a learner as well as a teacher and minister. There is so much to be learned from pastoral staff. They've got the educational background. They're usually people who read a lot, books and periodicals. They're an unbelievable resource. They have unbelievable wisdom based on hundreds of counseling situations. And it's so easy to be a cocky, self-assured discipler instead of a learner-type discipler. Ten, don't let your ministries compete with the scheduled church activities. We will only schedule our personal ministries things in ways that will not compete with their church related activities if they're not in our church, and will not conflict with our church. Okay, let's open it up for some interaction on whatever you'd like to talk about. no question is too trivial. And maybe the thing you would like to comment on, and I'm after comments and questions. I don't have the answer to everything, but maybe somebody in this room would like to comment on what you would like to ask. Yes? Okay, any additional insights into singles in the church? Today there are a lot of books and seminars available on singles that did not exist 5 years ago. That was a big unknown. There are a lot of books on the previously married, and by and large the evangelical church we have looked down our nose at divorced people, and they have become the leper, and those are hard things to deal with. You know, when you get into the doctrines and theology related to divorce and remarriage, those are hard issues. But in Denver, something like 60% of the 300,000 singles in the greater Denver area are previously married. Something like 60%. And so you've got, you know, 180,000 divorced people in that city. And we will do more and more. Our evangelism will hit more and more people who have come through a difficult situation related to a previous marriage. The larger churches across the country are really doing some neat things for singles and have some great programs for singles. The small churches are at a great disadvantage in the targeting of singles. And so in some cities, singles are getting together from numbers of churches. And I think one group, I think it's called Rocky Mountain Singles in the Denver area. I may not have the right title. There are several singles groups, and I'm not real sharp on that. But from numbers of churches, they come together. This church, the Church Unleashed, this is a Denver church. Those singles meet in cafeterias and shopping centers Sunday morning, and they eat breakfast together, and they have a message, and they've really geared it to where they feel comfortable. And a lot of these singles don't feel comfortable inside a church, but they are really hungry for spiritual things, and they're reaching good numbers of singles. Anything else on singles you want to comment on?
Yes.
For the sake of the tape, I'll repeat all these. So, in your church, you don't have room for singles to meet for a Bible class, and so you're looking for another location. I also know that this church is using some homes near the church, as well as shopping center cafeterias. Okay, other subjects, other areas? Yes. Okay, when we first went into this church, did we plan to go in there and start a Navigator ministry? Did we talk to the pastor, or how did we approach it? We were looking for probably a year and a half after we moved to Denver, we were looking for where we would like to attend church. And I was teaching Sunday school in an evangelical friend's church, a Quaker church, for a number of months. And I was tied up there, and that was the beginnings of the 2-7 series, so it wasn't a total loss. But we kept looking for a church that would be good for our kids, number one. And number two, is it a forward-looking church, an innovative church, where innovative kind of people will be coming in, or is it a very narrow, traditional in the negative sense kind of? And so when we found the church that we thought we would like, then we attended it a few times and we said, yeah, this is it. Let's join. And so talked to the pastor and said, we like what's going on here. And he'd come to Christ through a navigator ministry when he was in the service. Does he think like a navigator today? No. Has he lost the vision? No. He thinks a little different. But our goal was not to start a navigator ministry there. It was primarily a place where our children would have a good experience, as we would always have ministry someplace in the city. Yes? Okay, to comment on what does a pastor mean when they want a trained group leader or a teacher? If the pastor is the shepherd of the flock, the pastor does not want people to come in with false doctrine or to cause division. And there are some horror stories where there were small group studies in homes in certain cities in America. And people from that pastor's church got into a major cult as a result, or some emphases that pastor did not like, to where some of those people eventually completely left any church. So they know some of these horror stories. And so they don't like to give up control of any kind of small group activity that's going on. And then also, they realize that there are very few lay people who really have the background to get up and do a good job of teaching Sunday school, particularly in an adult class. So those are two reasons why they're jumping. And you see, the pastoral staff, that gets into the whole philosophy, strategy of ministry issue. See, I would like to see the pastoral staff of your church read this book. I would like them to think more function. Now, what is the function of this block of time? And I'm not being critical. You know, I don't know enough facts to, you know, be critical. But those are problems that have got to be dealt with in some way. Bud?
Ron, you talk about philosophy of ministry, and I think of that in terms of that which we may see conventionally or traditionally followed. And relating to the needs that exist in typical town, USA, evangelical church, is there, or what sources are there that may be available to pastoral staff in that area to help them focus on what you described as philosophy and strategy of ministries? The thing I'm concerned about is the glaring needs and seemingly continuing to pursue what I look at as a pretty much of a traditional thing and failing to, because of a lack of a plan or strategy mm-hmm. on how to achieve or mm-hmm. to meet the needs that exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you just articulated the problem clearer than we have so far. And you see, the seminaries are just starting to really get into the issues of philosophy and strategy of ministry. And seminaries previously have tended to present form in many cases rather than function. And they're seeing the need to adjust, but there's always several years delay between insight as to what the problem is and how it can be resolved before it hits the seminaries and therefore hits the young pastors coming out. Telepa also has a set of tapes for $25 that goes beyond this book. So I would like to see every pastor read this book. Not that they want to become the denomination that this man is, nor that they're going to do exactly what this church did. But this is on the cutting edge of anything that's being written or said to pastors about what strategy are we going to use? What are the pastoral staff going to do in this body and in this ministry? What are the lay people going to do? What kinds of ministries are we going to get into? Those are philosophical questions. Do you want to know the bottom line in this book, what their strategy and philosophy is? It's that every person in that church should be in some ministry. It can be a social action ministry. It can be an evangelistic ministry. It can be a Bible study ministry. It can be a runaway children's ministry. It can be... And this church has 19 ministries that are being carried out by lay people in the church. Most churches have 8 or 9. They have preaching. They have a Sunday school. They have a Sunday night service. They maybe have a good youth program. They have a midweek service of some sort. They have some kind of visitation. Well, you add up what's going on in most churches, it'll be 8 or 9. And the leadership primarily is generated by pastoral staff. These 19 ministries are primarily generated by lay people, but they are capable lay people.